Hello and welcome to the MIT Press Podcast. My name is Chris Gondak, and today I'll be speaking with Steve Jones and George Thiruvathukal, the authors of Codename Revolution, the Nintendo Wii Platform. Steve Jones is professor of English at Loyola University in Chicago, and George Thiruvathukal is professor of computer science at Loyola University in Chicago. Steve Jones and George Thiruvathukal, thanks so much for being on the MIT Press Podcast today.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Steve, I want to start with you. Nintendo released the Wii back in 2006. What was it that made it different from the video game platforms that preceded it?
Yeah, well, the Wii was the first to make a motion control interface, the mimetic interface, the center of a game system. You know, there had been motion control before, including Nintendo's own Power Glove, for example, for the NES. And there are a lot of other examples, mostly novelties in the history of gaming. But this is the first time in history that the whole design of a major console was built around that kind of user interface, motion control, and what that afforded in the way of game design and gameplay.
Did Nintendo have a sense of who their target audience was going to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's there's been a lot of discussion of that. They used sort of typical marketing terms in some ways that, for me as an English professor, are really rich metaphors. You know, they talked about a blue ocean strategy for marketing, for instance, or where they were going out into the part of the ocean that wasn't, you know, being churned up and turned red by the competition between the other two major competitors, Sony and Microsoft. And then they also spoke of being the nimble dinosaur in the environment that was smaller and quicker, and they would let the other two big dinosaurs just battle it out in their corner of the environment. So for me, that I think they're thinking about, you know, this wide open space in the market, the people who were first time or never had been gamers, or people who were what Jesper Juul has called casual revolution, the people who were interested in gaming, but in this newer way. And so this niche that the little dinosaur was dominating and did dominate between at least 2006 to 2009 or 10 really turned out to be really huge.
I was going to say, when you think about all the people who aren't necessarily involved in games, that's a pretty big niche to be marketing.
It's everybody else.
Yeah. So as they said, we're going to be going after either the casual gamer, or we could say anybody who is not a hardcore gamer, who we would think of perhaps, you know, a young guy who's doing a first-person shooter type game. If they're saying we're going to go for everybody except that person, how did that influence how they decided to design the Wii?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the motion control earlier. Maybe George wants to say something about how that technology works, because I think even down to the sort of literally microscopic level, they thought about design of the technology as reaching that target audience.
Yeah, yes, I'd be happy to speak about this. So essentially, advances in MEMS technology, which is basically a focus on these micro-scale mechanical and electrical devices, is what, you know, made you know, the motion control and mimetic interface that Steve alluded to earlier possible. And these devices basically are characterized by being very, you know, they're small, you know, mechanical devices that are capable of producing digital output. So a really good example of this is the three-axis accelerometer, which produces digital outputs that measure, for example, the X, Y, and Z coordinates that that the Wii remote is actually generating to do its work. And the other advances that have taken place that, again, make this casual revolution possible are an emphasis on a bit of a more low-profile nature of the device. So, for example, there is much lower power consumption to be found in this gaming platform. And there's, you know, a much greater emphasis on having what we call a nice piece that can be placed in the living room, a so-called right size profile, if you will. And the other characteristic of this system is that it forms basically a small personal area network that is designed to allow interactions within the adequate game space of the living room.
About the living room, I mean, both of you talk about empty space, and that this is, to some degree, the system was designed for empty space in a living room or wherever. Could you talk about this concept of empty space? What did you mean by it?
Yeah, I think what George is quoting in his description there is really telling. It comes straight from the Wii operation manual, you know, that ships with the system. And there's a little diagram, as there always is, of how to lay the system out. And then right in the center, it says adequate space required. You know, and for us, this was really resonant. It means more than they thought it meant. You know, they didn't just mean the number of feet that you had to stand from the TV, really. It's about what is adequate space for gameplay. And that empty space of the living room is really crucial. And in fact, we have a kind of a private joke that showed up on the cover of the book in a way that the missing component of the Wii as a system is the coffee table that, you know, it only comes into play when you move it out of the way. So you have adequate space to play the Wii without knocking your shins. But it actually is symbolic of that kind of domestic space turned into game space, where you have to have that it's controlled, you know, it's connected by wireless connections of various kinds and some wired connections. But these components that you hold or stand on, that these peripherals that created what George has described as a personal area network for gaming in the living room, form a kind of, game space out of the living room you're in. And the Wii, for the first time, really, I think, is a system that shifts attention to that as the center of activity. That's where the action is. People jumping around and waving their arms around, rather than, you know, a virtual world model of the game space. I tell my students sometimes, the way to think about this is that the Wii is a little more like, say, Twister, in a conventional video game. There's the components of the system are tokens and prompts for structuring kind of social gameplay in that physical space.
I have to ask, do your students sometimes look at you with a puzzled glance when you compare it to Twister?
No, it's retro. You know, they're all, they know about this stuff. You can collect these on the internet now.
You know, in that answer, I want to go back to George about the peripherals. One of the peripherals that we introduced, which was mentioned something you stand on, is the balance board. You know, what was the balance board supposed to do, and then what did the balance board end up doing? I found the balance board peripheral really interesting.
Yes, and as did we, no pun intended. In short, you know, the Wii balance board, first of all, you know, is inspired by the notion of the typical bathroom scale that is familiar to all of us, especially from the 80s and 90s. It is now replaced by a more digital counterpart. However, the basic idea comes from, you know, being able to weigh sumo wrestlers, where basically, you know, two scales are needed, one for each foot, simply because it puts too much strain on the scale. So the basic idea is that the balance board is designed to, you know, to capture player data, you know, about the body that's actually standing on it. And this includes everything from weight, center of gravity, and movement. And this is, to elaborate a bit, When you use the balance board, you know, in games like, you know, Wii Fitness, one of the very first things that's done in the game is to actually measure the actual weight of the player, if you will. And the other thing that is done is to actually measure whether you're actually centered properly, because in many exercises, especially in even traditional martial arts, balance plays such a key role in everything you do.
Yeah, I think I like the idea that it's a peripheral that exploits the periphery of that game space we were talking about earlier. As George says, it's like a bathroom scale, and there are rumors within Nintendo that originally the idea was people experimented with the notion of having it actually be in the bathroom, so you'd weigh yourself. And that data would be gathered, but then you'd go into the living room to play the game. And then they figured out they could actually use it as a control, as a motion control device out inside the game. But that's really telling, I think, because it is out on the periphery. You know, it's of what game theory sometimes thinks of as the magic circle for gameplay. It's really on that boundary that you stand when you use a device like this. But it focuses attention on that spot, you know, because you first of all, you've got to be careful. If you jump too hard on it, you'll break it. But you become self-conscious about being at that spot on that periphery. So it's literally a peripheral in that way.
So when we think about the Wii as composed to, say, another platform like Xbox, How do they differ in terms of the sociability of it? I got a sense, you know, when I read your book on Wii, it seems that the sociability is much more a group of people physically in the same space as opposed to what I would think of Xbox, where you could do Xbox Live and you could be playing a game with somebody halfway across the world. Is that a good way, at least when initially it came out, a good way to delineate between the social aspect of Wii versus the social aspect of the Xbox platform?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I think we live in a moment when the whole idea of the social aspect of gaming is in flux. For most people now, if you say social games, they think of Facebook games, games on social networks. But there's always been a social component to all gaming, even single-player games, but certainly multiplayer gaming, you know, as you suggested, online, or even LAN parties where everybody's in the same space but logged on together. So that's to start. There's always been a social component of gaming. It's just a question of where the emphasis lies. And our definition of it is, as you suggested, that it's shifted out into this kind of possibility space and physical space that's defined as a place where social interactions ideally take place. So out in the room, you know. So think about, however, the platform of print when it comes to book history and how the technologies that made it possible for books to reach their audiences only become meaningful when you think about that space, you know, that social space outside where readers form groups or go to lending libraries or they have enough income to purchase books, and all of those considerations that book historians or textual studies critics like me look into are not only part of how you understand the Wii, but really that's where the focus went in the design of the system, is thinking about how to structure that space outside the system. So it's social in that really kind of more physical way, in a kind of old-fashioned sense of social games. By the same token, I think it's interesting that you can see that even Facebook games are, you know, have a resemblance to what the Wii does, in that both kinds of games measure or record or tap into what players are doing out in that physical and social space, or even in online social space, and then connect that to the game space in some way.
Another way I thought that Wii was different, and I'd like you guys to address this, is it also seemed to be one of the first systems that allowed somebody not just to be the player of the game, but to actually start creating media, which is another fine thing of social networks. And I got the game that I think you talked about, the game was called Wario DIY. Could you talk a little bit about the DIY aspect of Wii? How important was it to the system?
Yeah, I don't know how centrally important that is to the actual operation of the system. For us, it was an important aspect of understanding the kind of game design that worked well on the Wii. But actually, you know, every major platform has sort of games with level building built in now, and this has become kind of pervasive in gaming to at least allow people to create some content or to create, you know, levels or to customize their avatars to a degree. But WarioWare DIY we really liked because it you make these micro games that are just seconds long. So they have a kind of disposable quality, you know, that they're for fun, and then you make them, and then you can make another. But then you can, you know, you can sort of play them on the Wii, or you can play them on the handheld DS, and the process of making the game is mapped out for you in a way that's a kind of comic and simplified version of actual game development, insofar as we understand it. You know, we're not developers, but you take existing properties and recombine them. You even create kind of marketing campaign and packaging for your game, and then, you know, when you can draw original art in the program and import that into the game. And actually, we talk about this in the introduction. We made a little game for fun in that game called Adequate Space Required. You know, a game about this whole problem of scooting the furniture in the living room. So you have just a few seconds to move the coffee table before the television explodes in the game, is the way this one works. And it does encourage in a kind of, there have always been sort of drawing art programs that came with Nintendo, and because their market has been perceived as being younger, there's a lot of this kind of playfulness that we think is actually really significant, not as sophisticated as some of the level building and some of the deeper sort of core titles. But it it actually may be a way to sort of get a handle on what's significant in a social way about designing a game.
I'd like to end this talking about another Microsoft product. I've mentioned the Xbox. I'd like now to talk about Kinect, which Microsoft launched in 2010. And Kinect, in some ways, seems like it was a direct competitor to Wii. It was they brought this thing out specifically because of the physical and somatic things you could do with the Wii. But in other ways, it seems it's a very different product. George, I was wondering if you talk about the technical differences between a Kinect and a Wii and how they speak to the different ways, I guess, these two companies or two platforms experience the game process.
Yes, this is very good. And in fact, I may actually go back and reference, briefly your previous question as part of my answer to this, because a big part of our overall social argument is kind of, in part, a technological one, where, the Wii actually tends to, place a great emphasis on what I call more local as opposed to remote interactions that you find in the typical live games or social games that are emerging on Facebook. So our do-it-yourself, game was even aimed at kind of highlighting, the fact that there are these personal, personal area networking considerations that, that actually very much affects the way we view game space. Anyway, now back to your point about Kinect, or your question about Kinect, I apologize for that. The Kinect, basically is in the most basic terms, to use Microsoft's own marketing collateral here, is where basically there are no gadgets. The controller is just you. And so in a technical sense, the emphasis is on, the complete removal of gadgets, and it's focused on, basically what's called a form of image processing, where we actually look at the, we basically are photographing the user constantly, to actually detect the joint movements. In terms of the actual hardware itself, this is accomplished with a camera that, basically has separate R, G, and B, red, blue, green, and blue components that can be photographed, and also a monochrome CMOS sensor that actually allows you to, basically do a lot of the things that are done in the Wii remote to inform the, like the detection of space between the user and the Kinect. So this approach is radically different at some level because of the removal of gadgets, yet it has much in common with the Wii remote as it kind of inverts the direction of the controller to point at the user instead of at the sensor bar. So what this allows you to do is to have a focus that's on gesture, facial, and voice recognition, which is kind of interesting from a historical point of view because it actually is related to Microsoft's longstanding interest in looking at alternative interfaces for their Windows platform. There was the very famous Bob project where, the idea of this project was to take the Windows user interface and basically turn it into a house where, for example, the user could go move around in virtual rooms that could be customized, to support certain interface functionality that you find on the Windows platform. And interestingly, the Kinect is now being about to be sold, if not already, as an add-on to the Windows desktop that may actually end up bringing back some of these ideas that you find on this platform that was kind of a failure of sorts that happened in the 1990s. So the one thing is that not all types of gameplay are really possible. At least with the current incarnation of the Kinect, especially when it comes to recognizing finer gestures. This might be, for example, maybe you want to, press the trigger on a gun. It might be releasing a bowling ball. And the other kind of interesting issue at play here is that in terms of space considerations, it seems like a lot more than adequate space is required to play many games. Steve and I, in the final days of writing our book, were spending a fair amount of time bumping into one another as we tried to play these games, which, of course, we feel still fits into our overall social argument, as we both ended up looking quite silly doing it.
Steve Jones and George Theravathakam, the authors of Codename Revolution, the Nintendo Wii platform. Thanks so much for being on the MIT Press podcast today.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
Thanks for having us.
For more information about this and other titles, please visit our website at mitpress.mit.edu. Don't forget, you can find us on Facebook, www.facebook.com/MIT Press, or you can follow us on Twitter, where we are at MIT Press. This episode of the MIT Press podcast was engineered by Stephen Cray, copyright 2012, the MIT Press, all rights reserved.